Excellent. So if you'd like to get yourselves comfortable again. It's amazing just how many people there are this evening. I think that if you want to get a seat next week, you'll have to camp out here overnight on Thursday to ensure you get a seat. I once gave a talk in one of the temples in Singapore, the Taiping Center in Lavender Road. And after I finished giving my talk, the organization banned me from going back. I got banned from ever going to that temple again because so many people came in, I broke all their fire regulations. So they said, "You're too popular, go somewhere else." Very good. So as the last people try and find a space somewhere. For those of you who don't know, that sometimes that I take requests for subjects to talk about on a Friday night. These are things which cause people difficulty and problems in their life. And they want to find out how we can use Buddhist principles to deal with these very common problems. So instead of talking just a talk about Buddhism or Buddhist principles, which are not tied down to your real life, on a Friday evening I prefer to take a common situation which many of you find yourself in and how to alleviate the difficulties, to see a clear way through some of these problems. And this evening somebody was asking, and it's not the first time they've asked me this, when you have elderly parents, should you really put them in an old people's home? And if you do, how much should you look after them? How can you really care for them if you don't go visiting them that often because you're so busy with other duties and responsibilities in life? Do you feel guilty about that? How can you look after people who've looked after you? This very big problem of the care of elderly people. And how can we use Buddhist principles to understand a good, compassionate, fair, middle way to help one of these problems? Now, some of you may not be in that situation. Your parents are not that old yet. But it doesn't matter if it doesn't directly concern you. The talk is always interesting because these Buddhist principles, the way we answer these problems and face these problems, it just opens up the attitudes which we can use in our life, maybe not just to the problem of elderly parents, but to other problems which we have in our life. It's the principles which are the most important thing in these talks, and just how they are applied, in this case, to the care of the elderly, is just almost secondary. But nevertheless, in traditional Buddhist countries, we take the care of the elderly very, very seriously. It's really important in Buddhist culture to look after those at the end of their life. And there's a very good reason for that. Not religious, but practical. Because these old people, in Buddhism, they'll come back again. They get reincarnated. And if you don't look after the elderly, when they come back again, they'll create havoc as your children. In fact, I say the problem with young people today is because we never looked after them when they were old in their previous life. They are taking revenge. So when you accept the idea of rebirth, reincarnation, if you actually accept that and embrace it, it changes the whole ball game. Looking after the elderly becomes an investment in our future. And you can see just how at the present moment in many societies we put enormous resources into children because these are the adults of the future. We think this is our future. And our elderly people, yeah, we're supposed to look after them, sort of, just to assuage our guilt. But we think they're not going to be productive. It's a waste of precious resources, which means we don't give them the care that they really need. But if you understand they're going to come back again, then you better look after them. Otherwise, those people who have trouble with your children already, now you know the reason. So it motivates us for nothing else but pragmatism to actually look after those people who are very old. And there's an old saying in Buddhism that, you know, your mother, your father, maybe it's just say your mother looked after four or five children, and then one child can't even look after one mother. She looked after so many. So can't all you children, maybe four or five, share the looking after someone who looked after you? And you know that some old people sort of, and I'm getting there now, you know, once I had a youth group and I asked, how old is old? And these were children maybe 12, 11, 13 years of age. And they discussed it, you know, how old is old? And they came up with, once you're over 30, you're old. 11 or 12 year old kid, 30, you're getting past it. 40 is ancient. So how do we look after our elderly? In old places, you know, we did have more time, but I think it wasn't a case of time, it was a different value system. The value system was that, you know, money and career and stuff was not as important as family. Family was really important. And you know that sometimes that we do have these huge houses, and we do have a lot of space in our house. And why can't our grandparents, our parents, stay in those houses so we can have a family house? You know, one of the reasons is because somehow or other we've lost the ability to get on with each other. You know, and it's not just the children's fault, you know, it's sometimes the grandparents' fault. Because grandparents, we don't want to be a worry and a bother on our children. It's the wrong attitude. You're not a worry, you're not a bother. You're giving your children and your grandchildren this beautiful opportunity, you know, to be with someone in an older time of their life. Children and grandchildren get on so well. If you have your grandparents staying in your house, you have free childcare. You don't even need to drive them to the childcare centre. It's right there in your house. Really, really convenient. And you also have, you know, someone to look after the house, you know, when you're away. And never underestimate just the power of old people. Someone told me this story, I think it was over in Kelmscott somewhere, that this young guy, probably on drugs, broke into the house while their grandmother was alone in the house. And this grandma, she said to this thief, apparently, you naughty boy, that's not the right thing to do, you shouldn't do this, and grabbed him by the eye, by the arm, and dragged him out of the house, and don't come here again. It's only a little lady, and this was a big guy with tattoos and on drugs. Never underestimate the power of an elderly person. You know, because she'd never had any fear. She'd been around a lot, and she knew exactly what to do. So grandparents, and it can be a wonderful asset in your house, and that means that they have a place in society. They have worth. It's one of the most important things you can do to the elderly is to give them worth, give them a role, something which they feel they're valuable. Because in life, whether you're young, whether you're middle-aged, or whether you're old, if you don't feel valuable, you get very depressed and there's basically no reason to get up in the morning. And it's one of the important things which we should notice in our lives. If you want to feel valued, then other people have got to give you that value. So you give value to other people. as a monk, we are totally dependent on many, many things from you guys. Little things, as a monk or a nun, we're not allowed to cook, store food, buy food. We have to just rely on what you give us. We are deliberately dependent. Even though we're smart enough, we're clever enough, in our monasteries we've got enough land and water to grow our own vegetables, but we never ever try to be self-sufficient. Because becoming self-sufficient, either as a monk or a nun, or as a human being out there in the world, if you think you're self-sufficient, it means I don't need you. It is the cause of loneliness and the lack of that interaction in society, mutual need, mutual help, which creates this beautiful feeling of love, companionship, society, family, if you like. So monks and nuns, we deliberately say, we need you. And I ask everyone to say that to each other. Don't be so proud, independent and self-sufficient to think, I don't need anybody. If you do, you get lonely. You will never understand compassion. You never understand the beauty of interaction. So which is why, if you're an elderly person and somebody asks to help you, can I please help you across the road? You almost say, oh, thank you, young man. And go across the road, even if you didn't intend to cross. Afterwards, when the guy is out of sight, you can cross back onto the correct side. The point is that they need to help you. You need to receive help. And if you can have that beautiful interaction, you've got family, you've got love. Never ever be independent. Even if somebody can do the job better than you, say, no, please help me. So when we have this beautiful dependence rather than independence, our old people will never feel that they've got no value. They'll never think that they are a burden on your life. They will never think that, no, I don't want to get in your way. You're not in our way. We want you here. We want to help you so you can help us. We want that beautiful interaction of family, of love, of care. Please, we need you. And imagine in the later years of your life if you can feel needed and valued. Number one, there would not be so much dementia in our world. A lot of time dementia is when we give up. We just, no point anymore. We don't put any effort, any interaction with the world. But when you feel really needed, you've got a value, then of course those things don't happen. If you've got a need, being valued, of course your health improves as well. You don't need to spend so much time seeing doctors and stuff. How many times in your life have you not feel valued? No purpose, nothing to do. What does that do to your body and mind? It really brings it down. What is it like when you really feel you're doing a good thing, you're purposeful, you're succeeding in helping out some good charity or some good work in life? It gives you this sense of value, which means you perk up. You've got an investment in life, you're interacting, health goes up, happiness goes up, and everything else, your emotional strength improves. We do need to feel valued. And I think that's one of the problems with elderly people. They feel they're in the way. Please don't think like that. That kills you, sends you into dementia. You are valued. And when they are valued, of course, we love them to be in our home, to look after our house when we are away, to do little things for us and to look after the kids as well. I know many times when I was cheeky to my mum, my granddad got hold of me and kicked me in the bum. So I thought, oh my goodness, I am doing something wrong. Having those grandparents there was just such a wonderful thing for a kid. And you ask your children, would you like grandma, grandpa to live with us? Children say, yeah. Maybe you might. But why is that not? Why don't you like the parents around? Sometimes, again, is because we don't know how to live with each other, and sometimes the grandparents sometimes can be grumpy. But if you have a grumpy grandpa, then it's so easy to deal with it, because that's the other problem with elderly people. We think, oh, just it's so hard to look after these people. They're always complaining. They're always saying wrong things. And it reminded me of, I don't know, did Venerable Hui Khan give a talk again? Remember, she had this wonderful story years ago. I hope she didn't tell this story when she was here. It's one of her best, and I appreciate this came from her. She had a disciple who was just a Chinese girl who had married an Australian man. And she's a very, very good wife, but she had problem with her mother-in-law. No matter how hard she tried to please her Australian mother-in-law, she always felt unappreciated, always criticized, and never valued. And you may have that experience with your parents, grandparents, in-laws, or whatever. And she tried all sorts of ways to overcome that problem. You know, really trying to talk with her mother-in-law, now, really going out of her way to be kind, to find out what she liked to eat, and all sorts of gifts, and sometimes even meditating on loving kindness to all beings, especially mother-in-law. Nothing worked. And she was getting so frustrated that one day she went to the Buddhist temple and did some praying. And during the praying, I think she fell asleep, if I remember the story, which many people do when they come to this place. You know, I've just been back from Malaysia. During this retreat period, you know, I actually teach people. I don't sort of spend time by myself. It's not a rest period. I call it rest period for all the other monks, the rest of the monks, but not me, because I'm the teacher, so I'm leading the retreat. But I also just went to Malaysia to teach a little retreat and do a fundraiser for the nuns' monastery. So I do actually work very, very hard. And when I go to these places, you know, you go to visit other temples, and if ever you've been to one of these Mahayana Buddhist temples, you see this image of this, what they call the Goddess of Mercy. It's a symbol of compassion called Kuan Yin. Have you ever seen that sort of statue? And it's female, it's kind, and it's just an image. It's not a god which you ask questions from. It's just something which inspires the ideal of compassion and kindness and giving. So, you know, she went to sleep in front of this, and she had this little vision, sort of dream sort of stuff, and that it was this Goddess of Mercy. You know, just with the usual headdress and the flowing robe and the water bottle of compassion. But what was strange was this Goddess of Mercy in the usual form had the face of her mother-in-law. It was like you see a Buddha, and it's not the Buddha's face anymore, it's your grandpa inside. And that just changed the whole attitude she had towards her mother-in-law. And as soon as the attitude changed, she saw this as like as a symbol of compassion, not a symbol of irritation. The whole attitude changed, and said within a few weeks, the mother-in-law and the daughter-in-law had this beautiful relationship, just really like mother and daughter, simply just changing the way you look at people. So if you do have a bad relationship with your maybe father or mother, always complaining, always criticizing you, don't just think it's your parents' fault. Don't even think it's your fault. It's the relationship. It's about us again. It's our fault. Which means that you can change an attitude. And don't ever underestimate how powerful that change of attitude is. Sometimes I tell people that in a relationship, you know, when you're talking with another person, living, relating with somebody else, what sometimes you can do is actually put this window between you and that other person. And put in the window of kindness between you and the other person. So when you're looking at them through that window, you don't see irritation. You can see kindness instead. Like this story illustrates, and this is one of the stories in my new book, available in the library for a very reasonable price. Actually, it's totally overinflated price, but it's raising funds for our monastery for nuns. And in that little book, I told an ancient story from Greek philosophy. You know, there was a young man who went to one of these academies to learn philosophy, mathematics, and all the stuff which he used to learn in ancient Greece in order to get a good job when you graduated. And there was one teacher taught you everything. So he went under a famous teacher. And this teacher had a rule, had a procedure, that if you made a mistake, and if the teacher had to scold you for making a mistake, then you had to pay the teacher a fine, you know, an extra couple of dollars. So every time he shouted at you and criticized you, you had to fork out a few dollars. And he'd finally finished that school, graduated, and went to get a job in Athens. And whenever somebody scolded him and criticized him, he just burst out laughing. When anyone said, "You stupid, you're an idiot," he just laughed like ever. And people thought, "You must be crazy, you must be mad." Usually when people scold you, you get upset and angry. But when he got scolded, criticized, abused, he just laughed. They asked him, "How do you do that?" He said, "It's so easy. Now, when I grew up in this academy, every time I got scolded, I had to pay for it. Now I don't have to pay." That's why it's so funny. So if you want to teach your children how to endure abuse and scolding, every time you shout at them, make them pay a dollar. Which means when they go to work and they get shouted at by their boss, they will just laugh and take it. I don't have to pay. So this is an example how you can change the attitude towards people. Instead of actually getting upset or even seeing the irritation, you can see something else. And this is the other nice thing about Buddhism. Its psychology is so fantastic that whatever you see in another person is eventually what they show you back. So if you see in your elderly just this useless person who's always grumpy, always in the way, always trying to control your house, if that's what you see in them, that's what they will show you back. But if you change and look at something else in them, try and see their goodness, their kindness. Try and see them like the face inside a Buddha or a Kuan Yin or whatever else you worship or respect. See their face in something you respect. And if you see the goodness in them, that's what they show you back. That was one of the methods which I developed when I used to work in prisons. Whenever you walked into a prison, you also saw the goodness in these murderers, in these rapists, in these thieves who'd done very violent crime. Because if I saw the murderer in them, they would probably hit me. And I mean, it was very dangerous. I remember going to Canning Vale jail many years ago. It's called Canning Vale, they give it a new name now. Banks here, is it? Oh, no, not Banks, that's a kids' jail. But whatever it is. What is it? It's Hakea, is it? Hakea, yeah. Hakea prison in Canning Vale. I remember going there years ago, and as soon as I checked in to teach some meditation in the class, the officers at the gate, the security officers, gave me this little pen. And they told me, "This is not a real pen, this is a security pen. It looks like an ordinary biro, but if inside the jail you get attacked, point this pen, you'll see what looks like smoke detectors on the ceiling." So they're not smoke detectors, they're alarms. You can point it at the smoke detector, the alarm will go off, we'll know exactly where you are, and we'll come and save you. Because many visitors, just like you, have been attacked in the last couple of months. But they told me, "Do not tell the prisoners, it's top secret." As soon as I went into my class, they said, "You've got one of those pens too." Of course they all know. And this guy who was, you know, this huge guy, he's in there for, I think, murder or something. I got to know him. You know, he was a really nice guy, but huge. He was one of the leaders in the prison. You know, one of the guys who would fight others to get in that position of leadership. And he was this big guy, but he was my friend. And I always remember him saying, you've got one of those security alarms, haven't you? And he looked at me really seriously and he said, do you think you could even press the button on that pen before I raped you? And he was serious. And I said, probably not. He said, no, I'm too quick. But then he smiled at me and said, but I like you, we like you here, so you're perfectly safe. He said, if any of the guys behind me tried that, the guys in front will stop them. And I always remember that. I felt so safe in there amongst these gorillas. Why? Because they liked me. But why did they like me? Because I never saw the murderer in them. If you look for that, you get attacked. But if you look for the other part of them, the beauty in them, the goodness in them, you change your attitude, and that's what they showed me back. They were just so kind and protective of me in those prisons. And that's how you change the attitude with those elderly people who irritate you. They're not an irritating person. Don't look at that. Yeah, they've done many irritating things, and they've been grumpy from time. Don't look at that. Look for another part of them. And once you start to see that, that is what they will show you back. Which means this reason why we don't look after one another, you know, with our parents and their children when they get old. One of the reasons is because we don't have a beautiful relationship. If we can have that beautiful relationship, it'd be so easy to have them in our house. Look, in Australia, we've all got these huge big houses with so many empty rooms. Isn't that better, isn't it, than having old people's homes? Would you prefer to go to old people's home or stay in a nice big house with your children and grandchildren and have a family? In ancient times, houses would have so many different generations. When I first became a monk over 39 years ago, and it was in northeast Thailand, and in the villages where I became a monk, in some of those villages, I was literally the first white man they'd ever seen, let alone a monk. And I remember several of those villages, we'd go into the village in the evening for some ceremony. There would be no electricity in those villages. And in that part of Thailand, the houses would be built on stilts. Underneath would be where the water buffalo slept at night. And above would be where the people slept. I remember to this day going to that village and just seeing house after house after house where the whole family was sitting around in a semicircle in the open front veranda under the light of a little oil lamp. It was just a little bowl of oil. They had a rag pushed through the top of a toothpaste tube floating in the oil. That's what they lit. To see, and also the smoke kept the mosquitoes away. Very efficient. And it was, I saw the faces, you know, under this oil lamp of all these people, grandparents, old people, uncles and aunties, the family, the kids, maybe 20 people, maybe 3 or 4 generations. And they were talking to each other. Telling stories, jokes, ghost stories, which they always liked. Every night they would do the same. They must have heard those stories over and over again. But nevertheless, they had this beautiful family. When I saw that, I saw how much I had missed in my life. When, you know, I lived with my parents. Grandparents lived somewhere else. You didn't have this huge extended family and the great warmth of that family. It'd be wonderful if we can somehow find a way to get back to big families in small houses where we can interact. It takes a lot of give and take and understanding, but it creates a huge amount of love and belonging. And no loneliness. It's great economically to lessen the wasting of resources when we all live together. And we learn how to love even though people have different ideas and views. And it's a great message to our society when everybody wants to be independent. Everyone wants to have their own place, to do their own thing. Yes, you have many freedoms, but you don't have love anymore. You don't have a sense of belonging and friendship. So it's a hard thing. I'm always idealistic. But isn't it a beautiful thing if we can get on with each other? But also, part of the problem is with our elderly people. Many of their kids say, come, Mum and Dad, come and live with us. No, the elderly think that they are being a burden on you. Please look at Ajahn Brahm, the monks and the nuns. We are a burden on you. Haven't you got enough to do it in your own home? And these nuns are asking you to come and work your butt off in their monastery on the 17th. You know, it's so hard looking after the monks and nuns. You have to give them donations when you go to the temple and work and bring your own food as well and wash up afterwards. Why? Because it's nice to serve. So don't worry about being a burden. You're not a burden. We don't look upon people as being burdens. It's this opportunity to be compassionate, to love. An opportunity to give. So if you are an elderly person and your kids say, come and stay with us, Mum and Dad, never think you're a burden. You are an opportunity for your kids to pay back some of the debts of bringing them up. You're the opportunity for your kids to even grow greater in compassion. You're an opportunity, you know, to have this beautiful sense of family and kindness and love. That's what you are. So never ever think, no, I'm going to be a burden on you. You're not. The burden really comes when your kids are lonely. They haven't got enough help or support in the house. And elderly people, they can be sometimes so mellow. They've been there and done that before. Just like in a monastery, the elderly monks, the old monks, whenever there's an argument with the young monks, now the elderly monks, yeah, we've been there, we've seen that before. Now come on, it doesn't really matter, let it go. Sometimes that mellowness of the elderly and sometimes even their slowness helps slow us down as well. We're just such fast-moving people. And when you have an elderly person who can't walk that fast at all, isn't it a great way of slowing us down as well? So we don't run so fast through our life. Instead, we can linger. We can go through the beautiful moments of our life like an elderly person on a Zimmer frame, just enjoying every moment instead of rushing. Have that image. Have you ever been in St. George's Terrace when everyone is rushing around and seen a person with a Zimmer frame slowing everybody down? They're so compassionate and kind, those elderly. Just showing, just you don't have to go fast. And it's the opportunity for slowing people down so they can appreciate things. So as far as I'm concerned, the elderly rock, they're good. Maybe it's because I'm getting close. And giving them value and letting them know that they are got a purpose in life, that they are welcome, and it's great to be looked after, is a beautiful way of getting compassion, family, and overcoming many of the problems and obstacles which we have in our life. Now, what are your main problems in your life? Number one, not being appreciated, thinking you're not good enough, just struggling all the time. Some of these old people are just so compassionate. They love and be kind to anybody. They're not so critical. Many old people, they've been there and they've done that before. They're great teachers and examples to us. And you know, I say that because that is always the impression which people have of their grandparents. You know, when you're a grandchild. I will never forget my grandma. Because I could go to her house at any time, day or night. If I wanted some chips, She'd say, do you want some? I'd say, yeah, please. And she'd just go and cut up a potato and fry some for me. And my mother would really scold her. He's got to have his dinner tonight. And my grandma said, I don't care. If he wants chips, he gets chips. Now, you probably got grandparents like that sometimes. And you love them to bits. And they're not so critical. They're not so worried. They're not trying to discipline or train you. They just love you just for who you are. That's why old people and their grandchildren, they get on so well together. It's lovely to have them in the house. Again, years ago when I was teaching at a school, I asked a kid, what do you think? Because a few of the kids, it was a poor school, had single parents. And I said, what's it like having a single parent? And this was about a six-year-old kid. Said, it's terrible only having one mummy or one daddy. I said, why? He said, well, mummy, when mummy gets angry at me, I haven't got a daddy to cuddle. That was so cute. You know, it's just a simple thing, because sometimes, you know, if you're a single parent, of course you would get upset at your kids from time to time. But imagine if you had a mummy, a daddy, a grandma, a grandpa, an uncle, an aunt, and so hundreds of other people in the family. Your kids will always have someone to cuddle. Not just one, but quite a few. Ask your kids. They'll understand the importance of having grandparents in the house. So when you can do this, but if you, for some reason, you have got your grandparents or parents in an old people's home, you know, sometimes we think, oh, gee, we've got to go and visit them again. You know, it's a Sunday, I haven't got much time. Let's get this over and done with. It's a beautiful being able to serve and give to other people. It does not matter if you haven't got much time. As I mentioned earlier, when you're talking about serving and looking after, you know, coming to monasteries or coming to this place and helping out. Every time you serve and give selflessly, I'm not talking about money, I'm just giving time. Giving time to someone at work who needs someone to listen to them. Whatever it is, every time you do that, you always get this great boost of happiness, of energy and health. You're never wasting time by helping one another. You're making a beautiful world. And isn't that wonderful to embrace having little babies and kids here? I don't know if they can understand anything which I'm saying, but you know, a lot of times they get off on the energy of the place, which is really important. There's so many different ways to teach. It's not just words. It's where it's coming from and the energy which is being generated by, you know, kind and good and good thoughts. So even if you go and see your elderly person, even if they're in a coma and they can't listen to you, they can't hear you, nevertheless, it's a beautiful to give your energy to them. As you know, that's your son, daughter. You know, that's why my mother was in an elderly people's home, because I was over here in Australia and she was in England, because she developed dementia. I know that when someone has dementia, that you feel, oh, it's so sad when they got dementia. And actually, for many people, you know, they're quite happy having dementia. The only people who really suffer are the relations and loved ones. You're the ones who are suffering. My mum was really happy. She didn't have any worries, no concerns. I know one of the cute things which I noticed in the Alzheimer's ward of this hospital was that I went to visit my mother with my brother, and my brother said, that's not her dress, because my brother was making sure that she had all the right clothes, and my mother was wearing somebody else's dress. Because, you know, you don't remember what's yours. So you just go into somebody's room, and if you like the dress and it fits, you wear it. And so someone else was wearing my mother's dress. She was wearing someone else's dress. It's sharing. Wouldn't that be a lovely world if we all did that? You know, you saw a pair of trousers. This is nice, so you just go and wear them. And you get someone else's trousers. You get somebody else's dress. Isn't that wonderful? I thought that was so cute. Why don't we all do that? We just share. Instead of just saying, this is mine, and you keep off it. So Alzheimer's people, there's some really cute stuff there. Now, I'm not saying you should do that, because people used to do that here when we first came. They'd bring an old pair of shoes here, and when they go out, oh, this is a much nicer pair of shoes, this fits, and they take that back. Please don't do that, okay? I don't know if those people here long enough know what actually happened once over here. That people actually started complaining that not their shoes were missing, but just one shoe was missing. And it wasn't just one occasion. For about 6 or 7 weeks, you know, people would go, look, I can see one of my shoes, but one is missing. And we started thinking there must be a one-legged thief pitching only one shoe. But we couldn't figure out what the cause of it was. And you know what the cause was? We finally found out. Because it was one of the neighbours, a couple of houses down the road. They looked inside their dog's kennel, and that kennel was full of shoes. While people were listening to the talk here, the dog would come over every Friday, sniff, and if it found one which smelt good, it would take it back and hide it in his kennel. And it must have been about 20 or 30 shoes in there. So it wasn't a one-legged thief, it was a four-legged one. But you know, dogs don't have that sense of ownership. It smells good, yeah, why not? And that was actually quite pleasing, because sometimes we have such a sense of ownership in our life. This is mine, keep out. And doesn't that sort of break up, you know, people into, this is my house, this is my land, this is my things, keep off. And there's something beautiful about sharing. So sometimes old people are like that. They don't care so much about what you care about. They've been there. They're not worried about, you know, possessions anymore, because they can't take it with them, so they just let it go. There's something beautiful about elderly people. You know, they look at things in a different way, and sometimes they give us a different perspective on life. So that's why it's great to be around them. But if you do have someone in a hospital or something, it's great looking after them. I remember this person said that they would always go and visit their mother, you know, 2 or 3 times a week, you know, before work, even though their mother had Alzheimer's and couldn't even recognize them. Like my mother couldn't recognize me or my brother, didn't know who I was. And I was really surprised, because I was the only person who went into that ward dressed like this. And I thought, if she's going to remember anybody, she must remember me, because, you know, you stood out. But no, she didn't know who I was. But I always remember reading, this guy would visit his mother 3 or 4 times a week, and one day the doctor said, look, you know, this is too much, you coming so often. She doesn't even remember that you visited. She doesn't know who you are. So just once a week or once a month is enough. She doesn't know. And this guy said, I know that my mother doesn't recognize me, and I know that she doesn't remember when I last visited, but I remember when I last visited. I know who she is. That's why I will visit 3 times a week. And I thought it was so beautiful. It doesn't matter if she recognizes you. You recognize her. So that's why you visit. It was a beautiful act of kindness and love. It makes this world a beautiful place. Yeah, it costs you time. But what are you going to use your time on? Creating love and kindness in a beautiful world? Or just making more money? So these are important things which we can do. And the more we do these things, the more it creates a happier world, a happier place for us to live in. A more inspiring world, and it also creates a greater sense of health, being worth something, being valued. And if you practice like this, the psychologist will be out of a job very soon. This is actually the service, the giving is one of the great ways of creating a very healthy and good mind. But sometimes, you know, that you just find it so difficult. I'm teaching a retreat over at Jhana Grove for some Singaporeans. So after this talk, I rush back to Serpentine, where, you know, retreat's still going on. So I'm not staying the night here. But one of the women came up to me and said, you know, she was, well, the last time she saw me, that her mother was very sick and in a home. And she was very busy and she wondered, should I quit my job or lessen the work hours and sacrifice my career and look after my mum? Or should I just, you know, just carry on my career and just pay someone else to look after my mum? And I gave the advice, look, it's better that you either quit your job or lessen your hours and spend more time with your mother. That's a tough thing to say to somebody, because you know how difficult it is. But a couple of days ago, she came out to say, thank you, that was the best advice I'd ever been given. I did lessen the hours at work, and I spent so much time with my mum. Even when she was very sick, I spent the night at the hospital with her, you know, sleeping next to her, and I'd get up in the morning, get dressed, and shower, and then go to work afterwards. She said, thank you so much for giving me that advice. But you know, even though she did so much sacrifice, she asked me, but I still feel guilty. I could have given my mother something more. And this is one of the other problems with modern people. We set the bar so high that we end up, even if we visit, if we give, if we serve so much, we still feel we haven't done enough. Guilt has got no part in Buddhism at all. We don't believe in guilt. Isn't that a wonderful teaching? No guilt. You're allowed to make mistakes. You're allowed to do things wrong. You're allowed not to be perfect. Oh, what a relief. I don't have to be a perfect monk. I can tell the same stories over and over again. And I told the story again to this girl. I said, yeah, you're not perfect. You could have done more. She was a bit shocked. Hey, I wanted you to help me, not to criticize me. I said, of course you're not perfect. No one is. And then I told her, please go for a walk in the Jarrah forest around our retreat center. Go for a walk in the forest and please find me a perfect tree. One which is dead straight, all the branches evenly spaced, not a scar on the bark, and all the leaves green and fresh, no brown ones. Go and find me a perfect tree. She said, I can't, there's no perfect trees. I said, if you did find a perfect tree, it would be called government plantation. The trees in a forest are all crooked, bent. They've all got scars on the bark. They're all damaged and imperfect, which is why they are beautiful. Where would you like to go for a walk? In a plantation or a natural forest where every tree is damaged goods? So say you're imperfect. You're damaged goods. You belong to the beautiful trees in the forest. Isn't that a beautiful thing to say? You don't have to be perfect to be beautiful. And she understood that, to let go of her guilt. Because sometimes you think, I can never give enough. And it's true, but you give a lot, and that's good enough. So please don't feel so guilty. And of course, if you really do feel guilty, ask. Ask your loved one in the hospital, do I come and visit you enough? He said, well, I'd love you to do some more, but I know you can't. If you have a reasonably good relationship, the mother always loves you and cares for you, because that's what mothers and fathers always do. They just want you to be happy. They love to see you, but they don't want you ever to feel guilty and upset. Would you like your children to feel guilty? To feel upset they don't visit you enough? Would you like them to suffer? Of course not. So please tell your children, tell each other, yeah, I'd like to see you as much as possible, but if you can't, that's fine, but please don't feel guilty. We don't want to add suffering to this world. So that way, that, you know, if you have because of the circumstances, having to get your kid or having to get your parent or someone into an old people's home or whatever, be kind to them, but never feel guilty. That doesn't help anybody at all. And that way that we can have a much better attitude to the elderly people. We can look after them and care for them, give them some value. You know, whenever you go and see, especially some of the Asian countries, a lot of times they build, you know, if they do have old people's facilities, they build it next to the temple or something. And see, all these elderly people, they come in and help around the temple, they sort of sweep the place, answer the telephone, or sit down and just chat to people about Buddhism or meditation. They're just around to help. It's beautiful to have those people around. They're so helpful. You know, even to have, if you are an owner of a company, have a few elderly people around just to do some service. I don't know if any of you have flown to New Zealand. You know, but as a British Australian who goes to Asia a lot, you know, when I landed once in Auckland Airport, I was so impressed with Kiwi culture. Because as you went to the baggage carousel to collect your baggage, actually I never had any baggage, but I was traveling with someone who did, so I had to wait for them. And they had this little stand manned by an elderly man and an elderly woman, just giving you a cup of tea for free. Welcome to New Zealand, sir. Have a cup of tea. So while you were waiting for your bags to arrive, you could have a nice cup of tea. Now, I thought that was just a wonderful welcome. And I don't see why they can't have that in Perth Airport or Sydney Airport or Heathrow. You have to wait sometimes for half an hour to get your bags. And you get these people serving you a cup of tea while you wait for free. It's only a tea bag. It doesn't cost that much. And these elderly people were serving. And they were just so nice and sweet and welcoming. Win-win for everybody. So why can't we have places where, you know, the elderly people in our world can feel valued, doing simple things, cost nothing, they have a great time, you can chat with them. Now, they used to have a few, if you've been to Perth Airport a lot, they had these guys in yellow. And apparently somebody said that the government was banning them from actually being in there. They would just say, welcome, go this way, go that way. Because I traveled a lot, and it's the same old guy would always meet me. Because, you know, when I went for my mother's funeral, he said, oh, now how was she? He said, where are you going this time? Somebody else died? I said, no, one's enough, thank you. And you get a nice relationship with people. And that's a wonderful thing for people to do. So if you have a business, why don't you get sort of an elderly person there to be the receptionist instead of this sometimes stupid young hot chick on the counter? What you got that there for? Get this elderly guy. They're much more fun to talk with. And sometimes they know much more what's going on. You know, years ago when I went to this brick place to get some bricks for the monastery, and some of these, you know, they had this receptionist was, you know, gorgeous girl, but absolutely stupid. I meant that because I said I wanted 100 bricks. And there was something like 200 bricks, 1,000. So, sorry, $200, 1,000 bricks. I wanted 100. So how much is that? She had to get the calculator out. And I just divide by 10. It's simple. An elderly person would do that. And they'd probably say, we'll knock 5% off for you. Because elderly people are really kind. Hot chicks are really mean. It's true. You go to a counter like that. Because, yeah, they've been there a long time. It doesn't matter. It's only a bit of money, and kindness is more important. So why not sort of get places where just the elderly can get some meaningful employment? They probably just go there for fun. They're not looking for a great salary. They've got no dependents to look after. And if you do something like that, you're giving people a really good chance to have a good life. And the company gets really popular as well. Wasn't it, I think, in Bunnings, they were having elderly people actually man the aisles in these hardware shops because they actually been, you know, doing you know, do-it-yourself work for years. They actually knew what you meant when you said, you know, I wanted an eighth of an inch drill bit. He said, this young guy, oh, I'll just go to the counter and find out what you mean. So I mean, people actually knew because they'd been there, and they could give you good advice. Well, don't do it this way, do it that way, because I did all these renovations in my house. And they get meaning. Customers get better service. You do, you know, when you sort of get these elder people. And they look after you and they care for you, and it's wonderful. So it's such a waste of talent. You know, when we just think, okay, 65, you're too old. Out you go. Just, you know, get a caravan and go up north somewhere as long as you're out of the way. That's disgusting. So certainly as a Buddhist, we really look after old people. We welcome them. They're great assets. And they're not a burden. They're a boon. They're a benefit to people. So don't just throw them away. They're the children of our future. They've got so much to give us. They're really teaching us, you know, how to have a community, a family. And it's true that if you are an elderly people, people actually like listening to your stories. They really do. Sometimes you see an old person and they tell you their tales, and they're fascinating. You know that I went to an old person's home years ago in Pinjarra, and that's where I got the story. It's in Opening the Door of Your Heart. I haven't told it for years. This old guy was saying that when he was very young, one of his mates told him this story, that his mate had a daughter, and the daughter was only about 4 or 5 years of age, preschool in those days, would ask the mum every morning about 11 a.m. asked for a saucer of milk. And the mother, you know, was really busy, you know, cooking and stuff. She'd always give the little girl a saucer of milk. They were very happy that the kid was drinking something which was good. But, you know, why do you want a saucer instead of a cup? But, you know, I want a saucer, mummy. Fine. When this went on for about 6 or 7 days in a row, you know, the mother started to getting curious. Why does my daughter want a saucer of milk? And why does she drink it outside instead of inside the house? So she secretly followed her little daughter, who was holding the saucer of milk, and she went outside the house, you know, the old houses on stumps. She put the saucer of milk down and called out to her friend, a big tiger snake. And this tiger snake came out to drink the milk, that far away from the daughter. And of course, if you're a mother, you'd understand how she felt. She was terrified, but decided she couldn't do anything because she didn't want to scare that snake and get her daughter killed. Instead, she just restrained herself, and when the snake had finished drinking and gone back under the house that evening, she told her husband. And the husband said, I'll look after it, but do the same tomorrow. So the same following morning, little kid, 4 years old, asked for a saucer of milk, went outside the house, put it down in the usual spot, and called out to its friend, the little tiger snake, or the big tiger snake. And as soon as the tiger snake came out, its head exploded. The husband was waiting with the gun behind the bush and shot the head off that snake right in front of his daughter. From that moment on, the daughter refused to eat. Even though they took him to hospital, the daughter never recovered and died. And this old person said this is a true story. He was there when it happened. He said the little girl fretted and would not eat, and no one could save her. She died. It's a beautiful piece of wisdom from an old fellow. He said that father might just as well have shot the head off his daughter. And he said, do you think that snake would ever have bitten that little girl? Not bloody likely, he said. In those days you could say, not bloody likely. These days we've got political correctness in our Buddhist society. It's a beautiful... Do you ever think that snake would ever kill that daughter, bitten that daughter? doesn't, it wouldn't. Because kindness, compassion, is something which even animals understand. And I got that story in for this elderly person. I was listening to him rapt while he was telling it, as you are now. All this incredible wisdom. We love listening to such stories. So please, any elderly people, tell your stories. We're just eagerly listening, waiting to listen to them. That's your value. That's your worth. Please express it. And that way that everyone feels value. So I've got over time again. So before you all get old, I'll finish off now. Thank you all for listening. Are there any questions or comments about... Oh, I forgot, there's questions from overseas. Okay. Now, just to, for those of you who don't know how far this talk goes, it's always video. That's why we got this line up here, because if you go beyond that line, you know, it blocks the site. We have a question from Sydney, which is okay. One from Greece and one from Rio de Janeiro. So this is actually where people are actually listening to this. So welcome to you all listening to this. Hi, John Brown. Do you have any advice for someone suffering from an anxiety disorder who is sitting the HSC Year 12 exams? Yes, look. Examinations. If you pass those examinations, you will have to do more examinations next year. If you fail them, then you're free. Now, if your mother and father is listening to me, I'll be in big trouble for saying things like that. But it's sometimes we put so much stress on our kids that the exams are important, you must pass or else. David in Sydney, it does not matter if you don't pass. Life carries on and you can still live a great, wonderful life no matter what happens. If you really bomb out and fail all your very examinations, you'll make a very good monk. Peaceful and simple. There's so many, not everybody is going to pass and go to university, so try your best. And as long as the... This was... An old monk told me this. For those of you who know this Sri Lankan monk, that was the Venerable Ñānawimala. He told me at the end of every day, if you know you've done your very best, you can always sleep peacefully. The very best may not have been you've passed, but you've done your best, the best you possibly could do. What more can you do? Please sleep peacefully in Sydney if you tried your very best and it didn't work out. There's many people who failed, Einstein, Stephen Jobs, Michael Dell, all became multi-billionaires. Richard Branson too. So, David, you could be the next Richard Branson of Sydney. Don't worry. So, we are anxious because we think if it doesn't work out, the whole world is going to end. It doesn't. Okay, from Greece, Stefan. I am 25 and I am an only child. If I become a monk, there'll be no one to look after my mother when she gets old. How can I become a monk and at the same time provide a decent old age for my mum? You know, Ajahn Chah looked after his mother by bringing her into the monastery when he was a monk and looked after her. There's another one of my best friends. He was a Canadian monk. And when his mother got very sick and we thought she was dying, he was in England at the time, he flew to Ottawa, I think, just to look after his mother in her last days before she died. It took her another 25 years to die. And he looked after her every day. He cooked for her and cleaned for her. It's not the sort of thing you expect of a forest monk, but he did that. He even went to the shop to get food because monks can't have any money. His brother opened up an account at the shop so he could collect the food, and obviously the shop recognized him very quickly, collect the food, on the account, and the brother would settle the bill at the end of the month. And he looked after his mother for about 25 years. And that's the commitment. And he was a Buddhist monk, Ajahn Chah's tradition. And people were so proud of him. That's not what you expect of a monk. But it's what he did. Trailblazing, beautiful, good. So you can be like that, Stefan. You can still many, many things you can do, because in Buddhism we respect our parents so much that that's what we do. When I used to go visit my mother, I wanted to do something for her because I could build and decorate. Every time I would go visit my mother when she was alive, I'd always decorate one part of the house, wallpaper, paint everything. And I did that because I needed to give. And that's what I could give to my mother. And I was a monk. So you can still look after your mum. And lastly, Andrea in Rio, I agree that we need each other, but isn't it paradoxical with the other talk to be a happy hermit when Ajahn Brahm says never let anyone take care of your happiness? I didn't say never take care of your happiness, interrupt your happiness or take control of your happiness. So, you know, your happiness is your business. And I was especially referring to if somebody calls you a pig or calls you fat. Sometimes people say that I put on weight. This is not true. Because every time as a monk you get a bigger and bigger heart. A very big heart needs a big body to be able to sit in it. So this is not fat, it's my heart is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And that's what it's expanding me. When I see thin people, I say you must have a very small heart. So don't let other people upset you and take away your happiness. That's what I was saying. But being a hermit and helping others, you all know that many years ago I spent 6 months totally by myself. You know, the last 3 months I haven't been by myself. I have 15 days, that's my retreat, and the rest of the time teaching the monks, teaching the nuns. 24 monks we had at Bodhinyana this Rains retreat. Because this is Australia, I say 4 6-packs of monks. You know, just using the Australian vernacular. So lots of monks, and they all need sort of talking to, training, counselling, teaching, and lots of people in training as well. The nuns would come once a week for a talk. Lots of business. So even during the Rains retreat, I haven't been just resting and just doing nothing. I've been, again, quite busy teaching a couple of retreats to lay people as well. So I give a lot. So when I'm a hermit, I'm a real hermit. But when I give 100%. So this is not paradoxical. This is the balance in life. So you give, and then you rest, and then you give some more. So it is true, if you are looking after an elderly person, sometimes you do need respite. Just come back a bit. Get your energies back up again. Get some perspective on what you're really doing. And that's what happens when you go on a retreat and become a little hermit for a few days. Because if you're caring for someone 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, you find you can't care that well. Even that monk who's looking after his mother about 25 years, he would go on a retreat every now and again and say, okay brother, now your turn to do a couple of weeks, I need to rest. So that's the balance we have in life. So hopefully that answers you, Andrea. I'm not always a hermit. If I was always a hermit, I would not be in front of this microphone giving this talk this evening. So thank you all. Is there any questions from the floor here? While we're here? Going? Oh yeah. Eddie, keeping the tradition. Thank you, Eddie.
Also sharing some experience, Ajahn Brahm.
Oh yeah, with your mum too, yeah. Go on.
Ajahn Brahm, the Buddha did mention about filial piety, you know. He said that looking after one's elderly parents is the hardest thing to do. I repeat, the hardest thing to do. But if one can fulfill the role, the rewards are immense.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, it's very
and
good.
Can I say it is hard,
but it's worth doing. So again, anything which is hard to do, you usually get great rewards afterwards. If it's easy to do, you don't get much out of it. You don't learn very much. So sometimes looking after elderly parents is good. And of course, remember, you'll be elderly one day. What don't you want to be looked after? Put your hands up if you want to go to old people's home when you're old. Put your hands up. You do. How old are you? You're not old enough to know that. Put your hands up if you'd really love to stay in a big family. I'd like to stay. I'd like to get old in my monastery with all my friends. So if that's what you want, that's what you have to give others. Okay, I think I've finished enough now. I've got to go back to monastery. So thanks all for listening. So we do the Arahang Sama Buddha. For those who are Buddhists, we can just pay respects to Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha now.
Arahang Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi Suvakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namassami Supatipatthana